Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Good morning, everyone. Jurassic Views, Zaya Quiena, Bryce Diamond, and we have a great pod in front of us. I know that you all probably listen to this podcast week to week. I'm in the trenches almost day in, day out. And this second season, I've been a little lonely, Zaya. I've been a little lonely. My running mate's not with me. I know it's only been a week since we spoke, but that week is long, man. That week is long. And when there's losses, when there's drama in the Raptors universe, that week feels a lot long. It feels like a month. We have so much to talk about, man. And we haven't even got to our personal lives. We have so much to talk about with these Raptors. And we have a new weekly, I guess, tradition that we're starting today, a new weekly rhythm. This podcast, this weekend podcast is called Weekly Confessionals. We might work on the name, but it's a confessional where Zaya Quiena joins me, thank goodness, on the pod, a little longer pod than a post game. And we talk about what you've been thinking about, man. So I am excited to have you back. I'm excited to hear what's really going on for you as a fan in your heart. Because sometimes you get very cerebral and we don't get the full Zaya experience. And I think that's unfortunate for our listeners. And I think, I think people are going to really be excited about what you bring to the table. How are you feeling about this, man? How have you felt throughout this whole week with wins, with seeing DeMar come back? What's been going on?
Well, first of all, good morning, everyone. Good morning, B. It's interesting, you know. I think I code switch. I got to be honest with you. Right? So on the recordings, there's a version of Zaya that I get that I offer and that everyone gets.
Yeah.
Pre-recording, offline, there's a unfiltered, brash Zaya.
Right.
That you see, obviously, unadulterated, just go off, right? And it's like a jambalaya. It's like a jambalaya. There's everything in it. You know, I throw statistics. I throw emotional, you know, rage. And I give you historical tales. I give you personal essays. But on the recordings, yeah, you're right. I try to walk a fine line. And I think there's reasons to that. And I will unpack that in our third segment where we talk about some more personal subject matters. How about that?
Yeah, that makes total sense, man. I appreciate it. Hopefully we get a little freestyle and we're not just getting, you know, well-produced album.
No, I'll be coming off the dome. I'll be coming off the dome.
I love it. I love it.
But no, so to answer your question, how have I felt with as we've gone into at least the, you know, first, you know, few games of the season, you know, in game, I'm seeing mistakes. I'm seeing miscues.
Right.
And those are the growing pains. And so as I analyze the game, I had to do two things. I've had to like not look at Twitter, right, and just watch the game,
and then
settle in after the game and realize these guys are doing their best to understand Nick Nurse's schemes. There's guys who are playing new roles, Fred, OG. We have a bunch of rookies, 2-year guys, 3-4-year guys, we're still learning not to play in the NBA. I think there's a difference between playing in the NBA, sure, then competing in the NBA at a high level with championship aspirations, right?
Right.
People think that champion aspirations should only be reserved for the Brooklyn Nets, the Milwaukee Bucks,
Oh,
the LA
gosh.
Lakers. No, it should be the mantra of every organization.
Right.
And so to get there, you need to build healthy, consistent, sophisticated habits. And to be quite honest, it takes time. So someone who jumps from high school doesn't, someone who finishes high school doesn't jump to doing their doctorate, right? You
Yeah.
go to different type of academic levels. You get a bachelor degree, you get a master's degree. Sometimes you work, sometimes you go on different types of explorations around the world in your field, and then you do a more sophisticated dissertation, right? We were talking about Chris Jackson being the geek. Well, those are the necessary steps to get there,
Yeah.
right? And
Yeah.
then if you and then you contribute to your field, right? You don't just you have a quick good opinion after high school about politics, and yeah,
Right.
please tell me what you think, right? Without any type of work. Same thing when we're expecting these guys who are coming out of college, who are young, don't have NBA experience. What are we expecting from them,
Right.
right? There's going to be growing pains. They're going to have to learn different types of schemes. And so that's exciting, it's because we've been seeing the loss, like we saw in Dallas, the blowout, Washington, the nail biting game in Chicago. And then we see the game against Indiana. We see the game in Boston. So it's a mixed bag, but that's kind
Big
of
time.
what we expect at this stage, especially without Pascal Siakam, without Yuta Watanabe. But I have to say, Price, and we're going to get into it, I'm excited about our young core, man.
Oh gosh,
There's
definitely.
mistakes. There's
Yeah.
like some, biting of the tongue. But I am excited because they're showing me some things that I think is ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Oh gosh, definitely. I mean, in a lot of ways, this team this year, unlike years past where there was predictability, there was knowledge, there was results that had a consistency to it. This year feels a lot like, Masai, Bobby, Nick, and the coaching staff. It's like they're farmers in the field throwing seed, onto the ground. And this, you don't know what you're going to get from the seed. And sometimes you forget that the seed is put in different places beside fertile land. Sometimes it's on, a rocky place. Sometimes it's in with the thorns.
Keep
And
going, keep
sometimes,
going.
right? Sometimes it's mixed in and there's a little more weeds in certain areas. And you just don't know what you're going to get. And it's amazing what has been produced this year. I thought differently of Goran Dragic 3 weeks ago than I think of him now. I think very differently of Delano Banton and even Svi off the bench. And obviously Scotty Barnes,
And with all due respect, I will interject because I think you offer an apologia to the one and only Gary Trent Jr. Because let's it, not only
Damn.
have we captured
Damn.
this in recordings,
Damn.
and you critiquing not only the trade
Uh-huh.
from several months ago last year,
Yep.
or
Yep.
last season, the extension we gave him. And I think you were skeptical. I think that's reasonable. But your skepticism was also met with an attachment to Norman Powell, but also this sense of not trusting Gary Trent Jr., whether he hasn't proven himself, regardless. What do you think of him now?
Yeah, that is a great question. And obviously yesterday's game, which we'll get into more of the numbers on from yesterday against Orlando. But Norm Powell was that cash crop type predictability. You knew where you're going to get. Yesterday, late in the evening, I decided to watch the fourth quarter of the Portland LA Clippers game. Was I feeling nostalgic? Was I missing you? Was I missing Norm? I was missing a lot of people. There was a lot of emotions last night, and I needed some comfort. And when I saw Norm in the corner, knock down a three after he hadn't got the ball on five or six straight possessions, and he gives a little flex after he knocks it down to the crowd. The crowd loves it. When he gets low on defense, like he's about to slap the court, a la Wojnarowski from Duke, your boy. I was like, this is the guy I know. This is the guy I love. There's predictability. Gary Trent, much like his hairstyle, he was unpredictable. I just didn't know what he was going to bring. Like his sunglasses post game in the interview, I didn't know what he was going to wear. For heaven's sake, Norm wears the same thing every time. It always has UTG on it. Understand the grind. You know what you're getting from our guy, and he's good. And I got to admit, I didn't follow the mantra in Masai we trust. And over this six games, not only have I become a fan of Gary Trent Jr., not only am I beginning to see why his unpredictability, why his mind and his upside is so good, but also the fit with all the characters in this new. I was thinking of the old, and Masai was bringing something new together. Behold, I am bringing something new. And I forgot about it, man. I forgot.
You know, Gary is having to prove himself, and he knows that himself. So it's not that your skepticism was kind of was problematic or heavily concerning. I think, you know, there was just an internal jab between you and I, because I was like, you got to let go of Norm and you have to,
right.
You know, pivot. Right. Right. Nevertheless, you know, is Gary Trent Jr.'s numbers popping out of the scoreboard?
Right.
After six games? Not really. You know, he's shooting, you know, just below 39% from the field. 39% from the field, 35 from 3-point shots. So I still think he's trying to find his stroke.
Yep.
He's, you know, averaging, you know, just under 15 points per game. However, I think he's articulated best in the post game last night when he said that he's having to prove himself defensively. He
yep.
wants to show
yep.
not just the coaching staff, but the media, fans, everyone, that he's not the worst defender on the starting five, right? And yeah. that he could pull his weight, that he's on the starting lineup because he has competency level on yeah. both sides of the ball. And I think he's holding himself accountable. And I think that's probably the biggest takeaway, is that he knows that we have high expectations.
Right.
Bar none. And yeah. so when we signed him, yes, we had his potential in view, but you have to actually let that materialize in the now, right? So
yeah.
what are we, you know, so what are you showing, what are you bringing to the table? And so when you see guys like OG VanVleet, you know, and, you know, Scotty Barnes playing
yeah.
at that high level defensively, you also got to bring it. So it's infectious. So that
yeah.
then translates itself why people are raving about his defensive abilities more
fourth in the league in deflected passes or deflected
yeah.
balls this year.
Right.
And
he's not the,
yeah,
he's not the tallest guy. He doesn't have the longest length. He's not the most athletic. He doesn't have the, you know, the strength like an OG and so on and so forth. So he's
yep.
having to find different ways to be imposing defensively. And
yep.
if we can like translate into the game last night,
yep.
You know, that deflection on Cole Anthony was, you know, we shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place. But
no,
nevertheless,
we can talk about that.
Exactly. That deflection kind of stalled Cole Anthony, being a young player second year, right?
Yep.
Where, you know, he shouldn't show the ball.
Right.
But Gary Trent is understanding that, right?
Yep.
He understood,
yep.
hey, how do I defend in ways that can cause disruption And that's the best thing you can do. And these are incredibly talented basketball players, right?
Definitely.
And so what you can add is terms of, you know, causing a little disruption. And I think he's capitalizing on that. And that shows more so his physical ability. That shows more the way in which he's thinking, right? His cerebral capacity defensively. And so that's probably, and after six games, what I'm really impressed with him so far, because his shot is going to, you know, it's come and go. He's trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But the letdown shouldn't be defensively, and that's what he's making sure that he's prioritizing as his calling card. And so that's going to keep him on the floor, to be quite honest, with Nick Nurse.
Definitely. Yeah. So let me be clear. I apologize to you, Gary Trent Jr. I apologize to your father, Gary Trent Sr. I apologize to the city of Minnesota, of Minneapolis. Sorry. Your birthplace. I am sorry that I questioned that you were not going to have this good of a season and have a higher ceiling than I originally projected. I apologize to Bobby Webster and to Masai. I'm sorry.
All right. And hard stop, right? You don't have to apologize to Duke University who invested.
No, I will not do that.
You don't have to do that.
Hell no.
No, you don't have to do that.
Now, speaking of apologies and last night's game, I actually called someone out that we have a lot of love and affection for, who's a Toronto journalist, who's a voice, deservedly so, on the Fan 590 for the Raptors. He is the main guy for the Raptors right now, William Liu. William Liu has been giving a tough time to Chris Boucher this season. Chris Boucher didn't even play in the bloody preseason because of an injury, an unfortunate one that he picked up right before our first preseason game in just an inner squad game. Chris Boucher played a nice game last night. And I'm not saying that he played at the level that we expected him to play based on last season, but 3 for 5 from the field, 4 boards, 2 steals, 9 points, a plus 18 team high. He was quality, and when he did it was really important. What were your thoughts on Chris Boucher last night?
I've also been, you know, I haven't been vocalizing it like Will Liu, but I've been really tough on Chris Boucher as well. And it had more to do with how he teased us last year, right? If you remember when we, you know, in that shortened season, and they came back in that December, January stretch, he was on fire, right? Yes. Like he was posting numbers that were, you know, kind of quite frightening, because we were wondering, is this going to be consistent throughout the season?
Right.
We were talking like double doubles. He was red hot from the 3-point line.
I was forgetting about Serge Ibaka. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes. and then, you know, he kind of came back to earth, and that's fine. But what that gave us was a sense that what he could offer is somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And so to start the season, the expectation was he's not one of the young guys. He's not one of the new guys. He knows the system. And so the mistakes that he was making wasn't he's missing his jumpers. If he's missing his jumpers, I get it. You know, he hasn't played preseason. He's still trying to get into the swing of things, but there were defensive miscues, right? There were turnovers with the ball that I'm like, goodness gracious, these are really rudimentary mistakes that you're making here, Chris. Let's get it going. And you also have to set the example, right? And so I think that's what may have also caused Nick Nurse to also vocalize that in his pressers, to be like, no, he's really playing below expectation, and he's not mincing words here. And last night, to me, I'm like, that's a Chris Boucher game, right?
Yeah.
He brings, you know, a level of athleticism. He stretches the floor. He runs the floor. Meaning, he doesn't always have to get the ball when he runs, but what he does, he disrupts the defense, and he gives more offensive options. And so again, the numbers won't jump out at him, but he did a lot of things in terms of intangibles that I think are consistent with the way we want to play, especially this year, and we're trying to play, and when we try to play small, when we try to be disruptive, then I'm like, okay, now that's good. Now let's see how he does in a back-to-back, right?
Yeah.
Let's see if it's consistent. But I think Nick Nurse also realized that he has to play Chris Boucher with another dynamic point guard like a Delano. So if you see, he's bringing Chris Delano with Chris Boucher in,
Yeah.
and someone who isn't getting those minutes is Dragic, because that combination just wasn't working,
Yeah.
right? And Delano's attacking the basket, and when he does, it creates options. An opportunity for Chris Boucher in the dunker spot,
Yeah.
and the fast. I mean, Delano's also pushing the ball, right,
Yeah.
and keeping his head up. So Chris Boucher is like, there's a higher probability I'm going to get the ball, right?
Yep.
In a way, in the flow of an offense that doesn't have to rely on some of my weaknesses. I'm not the strongest guy, so in a half court offense, I'm not going to have to bruise myself in the paint against bigs. Those are just not the advantage that I have. But an advantage that he does have is, in a fast break, I can outrun most bigs in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
I can stretch them out, right, from the 3-point line or putting the ball on the floor. And I think this is the swing, this is the swing skill for me, for Chris Boucher, is he putting the ball on the floor after, from the 3-point line, and not just looking for his jump shot. Looking
Right.
to make that extra pass,
Yeah.
right? Same thing in a pick and roll. It's not just immediately rolling to the basket. It's can you make that pass to the wing, right?
Yep.
Or and so we saw some of that last year. It's still something that he's still trying to figure out, because the game speed is, yeah, it's fast, right? And
Yep.
so your decision making, your playmaking, even as a big, has to be there. We saw that with the Serge Ibakas and with the Marcus Gasols. And so I think we're getting used to it. And so when Chris Boucher isn't doing it, we're rolling our eyes. We're,
Right.
we're getting a bit frustrated. But I think that's that learning curve. He'll
Yeah.
get there. I really believe I'm not just saying that. I think he'll get there. I think it's going to take some time. And I think with Pascal being back,
Right.
providing some stability, quite honestly, in the half court, I think that's where he'll gain a bit more advantage, because his numbers were actually better with someone like a Pascal on the floor last year in the first place. And so or a Kyle Lowry. And so he needs an anchor offensively. And I think
Right.
Nick Nurse has figured that out.
Yeah. Now, this was a fun game. It was a back and forth game. It featured two of the top five picks in the draft. We saw Cole Anthony play a very good game. And
Oh
I've
yeah.
looked at Cole Anthony's numbers this season. His
Oh
dad is
yeah.
proud former NBA player, now
Running
analyst.
Rebels. I think
Yeah,
he's more famous
Craig
because of
Anthony.
Running Rebels than his NBA career, because that UNLV team was a sight to
Wait
see.
a second. Wait a second, my friend. I know you were under 10 when it was happening, but those
Horrible.
days with the Knicks when he was
I remember those
guarding,
days too.
right? He was guarding the Kerrs and the Paxons. He was guarding
I
the
know, I know. But
Pippins.
you have to talk about him being on that Running Rebels, because
That was a generational. They got overshadowed because of what was happening with the Fab Five, but that Running Rebels team was ridiculous in 1990.
And more
Totally agree.
importantly, they knocked out the Blue Bloods, because that's what
Oh,
that
it
was.
was so
So
fun.
Anthony will always have a place in my heart.
Yeah,
But Cole,
but
going back to his son
Cole.
Cole.
Yeah, but this was a good game. It was a fun game to watch through three quarters. I thought the Raptors, didn't tighten the screws as much as they could have, but you could see that. OG and Fred were just kind of waiting for the right moment. Fourth quarter, they completely controlled the game. OG and Fred did on both ends of the court. Everybody stepped up. The starters all came back in, played at that high level. And then something happened that I'd love to get your opinion on. We referenced this a few minutes ago. Why did this Orlando team get back into a game when they were down with 3:30 to go? 12. How do they
Down
get
12,
back
down 12.
into the game?
That's a great point. I think you look at the roster, Bryce. Does anyone jump out at you? I mean, we did talk about Cole Anthony, right? He's been shooting the ball well.
But
Second
not in
year
the top
start.
30 player level.
No. So what actually strikes me is the coaching, right? They have a new coach. Jamal Mosley came from the Dallas Mavericks. He was on Rick Carlisle's staff. And one of the key takeaways from him, at least along with other attributes, was that he was really big on player development, right? And helping young players get acclimatized to the NBA. And if you look at the Dallas Maverick roster, they were playing a lot of the young guys along with Luka Doncic, who is also under the age of 25.
Right.
So Mosley was, that was his big takeaway. So when I was looking at even how we started, I felt we started very slow. I felt we were giving too many opportunities to Orlando, and then it struck, and I'm like, oh, they're just well coached, right? I've seen young teams before, like the Orlando Magics,
Yeah.
making a, you know, getting down on themselves after several mistakes, missing defensive assignments. But they are playing well together
Yeah.
as a team, right? The Mo Bambas are, you know, not he's not making the same mistakes as he was making a year ago, right? Yes, he's healthy, he's a bit stronger, a bit more experienced. But all that to say, I mean, I think Mosley has them playing with a bit more fight, because even in that fourth quarter, they didn't sink, Bryce. Right? Down 12 with less than 3 minutes, I'm like, this, the game's over. I said, after we get one more defensive stop, game's over. That didn't happen. It went to the last shot. So I have to credit, obviously, the players. You always have to do that. But the coaching staff had them playing with a level of discipline and a level of, you know, confidence. Because it really took, you know, you're also on the road. You're playing against an experience, at least an experienced coaching staff on the other end, you know, Nick Nurse and co. But this is also a team that beat the New York Knicks, right? Orlando Magics have. So I'm not too surprised, but
We
I'll leave it there.
certainly made mistakes. I'm not going to take anything away from Orlando. They make big shots. But I'll tell you 3 points that we gave to Orlando that made this game a one possession game, and really a game that we easily could have lost had Gary Trent not knocked the ball
Shoot,
from.
goodness gracious, Cole Anthony.
Again, forget about what we did on the offensive end in the last 2 minutes because we did nothing. OG missed a wide open three and a little bunny inside that may have got deflected, but he's got to be strong
No,
on
it
the
got
ball.
blocked by Jalen Suggs, actually.
There you go. But on the defensive end, here's 3 plays that we've got to clean up because a better team, a team like Golden State, a team like
Scored it.
Boston, New York, they're going
Yep.
to beat it. Number one, what is OG Anunoby doing trying to block a 3-point shot of Cole Anthony and getting in his landing space? Terrible. Ended up being a 4-point play.
It was Jalen
What?
Suggs, by the way.
Yeah.
He
Oh, okay.
fell. Yeah.
What are we doing leaving the corner 3-point shot to double team Cole Anthony as he's going
And
for a layup,
penetrating.
which
Oh my
he's
gosh.
likely going to cover the guy in the 3-point line. There's 2 points. The third point, they get an offensive rebound. Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. were beasts on the offensive glass. But why is Fred VanVleet putting his hand in the cookie jar trying to snatch a ball away when you've got a 6-7 point lead with under a minute to play? Leave him alone.
And
Three
I think it was
points.
bonus and bonus.
Yeah,
Yeah.
3 points that could have cost us the game. It should have been 110-106 with 10 seconds remaining instead of 110-109. Those little things. Forget about the offensive end. We could talk about that. Defensively, we got to be wiser with a lead. And it almost cost us a game. And those are the games for me. And this is where I nickel and dime the Raptors quite a bit. And I did this in seasons past because maybe I'm a bit of perfectionist when it comes to winning games or at least executing games. Those are the types of moments where if we lose a game like that, maybe that's the difference between the 6 and the 7 seed. Maybe that's the difference between the 10 and the 11 seed. I get frustrated with things like that, but I digress.
You know, it's tough in the NBA, right? Of not just getting a lead, but keep learning how to keep a lead, right? So if your shots are not dropping on the other end, then you're making the necessary stops without fouling on the other end, right? So yeah. And what we did in the last 2 minutes is we gave up both.
Oh yeah,
we didn't make shots, and we were giving up or fouling, making cheap fouls. And one thing that I was curious as to why we weren't continuing to run that pick and roll with Fred, because he was knocking that mid-range jumper.
And we talked about that last season, that we needed the mid-range. Man, he's showing up for us.
He was showing up. I was like, goodness gracious, is that Chris Paul? It was unguardable. Now, you can say that the Orlando Magic defended it better. But then there's a counter to that, right? And I think that's what he's going to have to – kind of still figure it out. Can we also just show some love? I mean, beyond just the fact that the game
almost
went to the wire and slipped away, that's part of the learning process. I get it. That's what I had to tell myself then for the next hour or so after watching the recording. I'm impressed that, OG and Fred realized that they had to pick it up, and they did in the fourth.
Right? Dominant.
It's also at home, and there's a back-to-back against Indiana, so maybe they were telling themselves they have to preserve their energy, et cetera, et cetera. But in those first three quarters, though, guys who did pick it up, Bryce, was – Delano Batten.
Yeah, let's get to them. Scottie We've been waiting Barnes. For this.
And I'm really, it's not that there's a fury of enthusiasm that I'm really trying to avoid and creep and allowing to creep into my analysis. So I'm looking, I'm really nitpicking. Okay, what are they missing? What type of defensive assignments are they missing? David Thorpe did an interview with Chad Ford recently, and he's raving about Scottie Barnes, but he's saying Scottie Barnes is also getting tired in the fourth quarter. So look at Scottie Barnes's defensive mistakes and his level of his aggression in the fourth quarter in the last several games. You'll see that it slowly reduces. Yes, it's going to happen for someone who's playing 30 minutes a game, 30 plus minutes a game as a rookie. The NBA is a different type of beast.
Absolutely.
However, in the first three quarters, Bryce, especially in the first quarter, he scores the first 7 points, by the way. He's hitting the jump shot. And you can get excited about the jump shot. It's falling. It's incredibly inconsistent. So when it's falling, it's like, bread coming from the sky. Nevertheless, I think for me, it's his level of awareness to say, okay, in this half court, we're running our scheme. There's no out opening. They're giving me this space, and I'm going to hit the jumper. And I'm going to hit the jumper to keep them honest, because these big men cannot guard me. And Mo Bamba essentially was guarding him to start the game. And so what that does, it brings Mo Bamba out into the perimeter, and it gives him a bit more space in penetrating to the basket. Now, who took advantage of that is Delano Banton, who realized my 6'9 frame, I can get to the basket at will. And Bryce, I don't know where this confidence is coming from this young man.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious, it's a beautiful sight to see, the level of cerebralness in analyzing the game or the floor, mapping the floor is something that they, a lot of the geeks in the NBA talk about. That's a sophisticated skill that not a lot of guys have at such a young age. And so before I go into my kind of my essay on Delano, your points, because we can talk numbers, we can talk all sorts of stuff, but there's other things that are popping out to me. That's a Chris Jackson reference, by the way, popping. That I have to emphasize on, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think obviously the length that both Barnes and Banton bring is incredible. I think, as you've said, the energy is great. Delano's ability to push the ball from off a rebound out of Jason Kidd is fun to watch. Obviously, Barnes does that too, a la Scottie Pippen. That ability you can't teach. You can't teach speed. You can't teach height. And sometimes vision is even, a natural thing. You can get improve your vision and improve your decisions. I don't know if Malachi is going to be able to catch either one of these guys, to be honest. Delano Banton is a flat out steal in this draft. Scottie Barnes may very well win Rookie of the Year. But what's incredible is that both of these guys were wanted by this team because Nick Nurse wants to play exactly the way they're playing: fast, furious, deflecting balls, getting in people's faces, not backing down.
Switchable on D.
All that stuff, all that stuff. It really is impressive what they're doing, and maybe we'll get to this a little later, but as I think about it, what they're doing, the pace, the ferocity that they're bringing to the court, maybe this tandem of Banton and Barnes is the Fast and the Furious. Maybe that's their nickname for this year, but we'll get to that later. We have Tokyo Drift, Yuta Watanabe, that's coming back. But it's really fun to watch, and I think they're both of them are well past our personal expectations, but are blowing the minds of defenses and scouts of other teams, because you're not used to so many guys. Even Precious Achiuwa, for heaven's sakes, is grabbing a rebound, making the read that there's space, and pushing the ball. It's incredible what kind of culture and what kind of strategy we're building. A lot of fun, man.
Bryce, there was Summer League. I was in Vegas, and one thing that it was great to kind of rub shoulders with was some, scouts and analytic guys and dudes who really study the game. And so there was one guy who goes by the name of PD Webb. He does a bunch of scouting, advanced analytics,
Petey, I hope
film.
to meet you next year.
Scouting film. And one thing that he did do, he did film sessions during the summer. This is the dog days of summer. So after Summer League, there's that huge gap between a training camp. And what he did is just study film of the Summer League. So he brought in different types of writers, and it was fun to do to kind of check in on some of our guys. One was Delano. They did one on Delano. They did one on Scotty. And Oren Wisfeld, who writes for the Raptors Republic and a bunch of other outlets, did it on Delano Banton, right? So you're studying film of Delano, and they're going clip by clip. What is he doing right? What is he doing wrong? Things that he can improve. What's his ceiling? So they're not really, they're being really analytical. So he's making certain this is Summer League, right? We're talking guys who are trying to fight for contracts. So there's certain reads that he's just making. So he's excelling. There's a couple of passes he makes to Freddie Gillespie that Freddie just bobbles. But again, you're
So funny.
emphasizing the fact that he saw that play. Great. Then there's a couple of mistakes that he's making defensively that you're like, oh, okay, that's why he needs the 905. Bryce, after that study session, I'm like, okay, my expectation that this guy needs reps at the 905. And he'll be a fourth, he won't be a third string point guard on our roster because that's to Malachi. And he needs more reps, and that's what the 905 is there for. Jump to this is game number six of the season. He's already correcting himself, he's already
Unbelievable.
making better reads. He's still making some mistakes, but defensively, he's much more aware of where he needs to be on help defense. He's having a guard at 6'9". He's having a guard not just guys his size, wingers, but also point guards. So shorter players like a Cole Anthony. So he has to learn how to navigate screens, get around and use his length and move his feet. So I'm like, this brother, his pace of learning, the learning curve that he's been able to navigate has accelerated. So that is not just physical attributes. That is that's something cerebral that I'm really proud of him for, because video can only show you so much, right? Especially what you could see in terms of his time in Nebraska or Summer League. And then finally now, it's, you know, I mean, it's scary good how this guy is drafted 46 in the 2021 NBA draft. And looking at who was drafted ahead of him in his position, like in terms of being a point guard, Cade Cunningham went number one. Jalen Suggs went number five. Josh Giddey went number six to OKC. Davion Mitchell went number nine to Sacramento. Trey Mann went to OKC, drafted 18. 26 was Bones Highland, another point guard, went to Denver, not getting any minutes. Jaden Springer, who was a darling amongst all the geeks in NBA draft, is playing in Philly, got drafted 28, I believe, not getting any minutes. There's a couple of more guys who were drafted in the second round. Jason Preston, Rokas Rokubatis, who's in the Knicks, Miles McBride, who went to the Knicks, Jared Butler, and then finally Delano. So you're telling me, Bryce, there's maybe, aside from the guys who were drafted in the lottery, Delano is actually getting more minutes and is showing a lot more. He's materializing essentially his potential right now. And he's better than the guys who were drafted in the first round. So you have to ask myself, what did front offices miss with Delano?
How did he get here? Unbelievable.
So I'm not going to go as far as to say, oh, he should have been a lottery. No, I understand there's different types of variables that go into investing in a young prospect that high in a draft. But even in the late first round or in the early second round, are you telling me that you didn't see this, right? And so kudos again to our front office, but also kudos to him for putting in the work, for having an unconventional route to where he is now. I do have to also add the fact that playing in your home city is yes, exciting on one end, but it's excruciatingly difficult, right, to live up to expectations.
For sure. Because, we've seen that through the Stephen Marbury documentary.
Yeah, Stephon Marbury, Derek Rose's of the world, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there are guys who talk about, I want to go home. Carmelo Anthony, I want to play in front of the New York Knicks. Yeah, but when things go bad, goodness gracious, it's tough to play so to do that at such a young age, especially for what Canadian basketball is at this stage, for the expectations to be there for him, how he's managing it emotionally, and also then just being able to focus and execute on the court, I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Definitely.
There's no extracurricular off the court mess that we have to concentrate. My man shows up to work, knows what to say in the pressers, and I have to say it, and I think this week we talked about, you and I have, but I think the NBA Twitter, Raptors Twitter specifically, talked about the Masai Ujiri versus Edward Rogers saga. The Toronto Star dropped a story earlier this week, and just in terms of the negotiation dispute between Masai and the ownership and MLSC, and maybe this dispute is exaggerated. It had a lot more to do with just Edward Rogers,
right?
Who has a seat? Who's a chair of Rogers and who has a stake in the ownership, was hesitant to offer Masai the the not just the contract extension, but also the vice chair, right?
Yeah, and certainly the salary as well.
And exactly, and Morgan Campbell, who writes for the CBC, he's a sports business columnist. Wrote something that that captured maybe the essence of what we of the story, but also in terms of what also happens beyond just at the elite level of sports, but what happens actually in everyday in terms of everyday experiences of people who are underrepresented. That could be someone who's racialized. That could be someone who is women, for example, in the workplace, people who are, members of the LGBTQ community, where their competency level is questioned, even if they have a track record of success, right? And they have to constantly have to prove themselves. How I'm going to make the correlation with Delano is Delano's track record isn't conventional, right? He didn't, going from the neighbor that he grew up in, regardless of how many people in the broadcast can shout out Rexdale, if you really understand Rexdale, Rexdale is not a paradise. It's not one of the, prized neighborhoods in Toronto real estate. Let's call it for what it is. So for Delano to be socialized there, kudos to his family and his community. For him to end up to where he is now, is quite credit to him and how he's really shows the attributes of, hard work, intelligence, wisdom at a young age. But it's also a matter of Masai Ujiri identifying that to see, hey, I'm going to select guys who are going to be a part of this organization that just don't come from the conventional route or who are often given the benefit of the doubt because of their association. Because they went to the big time schools, they have big boosters recommending them, they have third party brands, for example, pushing them, and therefore that will lead me to make that decision, or in this case, select him, much like most front offices do. Bryce, I mean, they picked him not just because he's from Toronto and Rexdale, let's throw our hands up, but because he's proven himself and he has some potential. And I think I'm proud for Delano on that end. But we're also, that's not just Delano. That's also how they selected Scotty Barnes, who for most people, they thought they were going to go with Jalen Suggs, coming from a big time school. Actually, it's becoming an elite school in the basketball.
Certainly the last decade, right?
Exactly. Kofi is just one of the best coaches in college basketball, and hands down. Mm-hmm. Yet, Scotty Barnes went to Florida State, Leonard Hamilton. We know who they produce, but he's not a sexy pick, right?
No.
But there's things that he does in his repertoire and who he is specifically in terms of character that leads someone like Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster to make that choice. Because he understands that, hey, my frame of reference isn't just you went to these big time schools and therefore that should determine whether I should select you. That isn't the way he also selected Fred VanVleet. That's not how he selected, OG Anunoby. It's not the way he selected Pascal Siakam either, right? So but that's also something that says something about Masai and the organization, obviously, but Masai's vision and the way in which he himself has an unconventional story. And then let me bring it back. Sorry for the long.
I love it. This is the confessional booth, man.
But this is going back to Edward Rogers in terms of this decision making, right? Saying, well, you know what, Masai, after he brings a championship to a team that outside of the U.S. market, increased the value of the Toronto Raptors
big time
to upwards of $1 billion, which actually is runs parallel to the, you know, major teams in the NBA,
Yep.
says with audacity, I don't think he's worth this raise or this promotion.
Yep.
We could do well with just Bobby Webster. Now,
Yep.
his camp has denied these accusations, like any, you know,
Yep.
anyone who can hire a good PR firm. But it also says something about in which how he makes business decisions, one, but also his frame of reference, right? He everything was given to him, right? Went
Absolutely.
to private school, you know, he's chair of a multi-billion dollar company. Yes, he owns stakes in the MLSE. Does he have a sports business savvy? Absolutely not.
No, he's Edward Rogers Jr. and
Exactly.
his father, Edward Rogers Sr., was the one who did all the work to get them to this level.
Yeah, actually, a tie into the story. Edward Rogers Sr.'s wife, Mrs. Rogers, actually funded a lot of the initial money, the
There you go.
capital.
There you
So
go.
I, you know, so this is someone who's inherited it. So he
Yeah.
doesn't really understand some of the nuances and the intricacies. That doesn't mean that he can't work hard, he's not smart, and so on and so forth, but there's a level of entitlement for him to
Yeah, oh,
make that
gosh.
type of decision without any credibility. And I think that's probably what has frustrated me the most, because this is not just done at the elite level in our society. This is done every day. This is done in the workplace. This is done in schools with kids, for goodness sake, right?
Yeah.
Benefit of the doubt is given to someone who has certain advantages
Yeah.
in life, right? Who knows what to say, who talks, you know, who talks the right, you know, who knows what to say in an interview, right?
Yeah.
Who can drop names
Who wears
in
certain
terms of
clothes.
who's in their network, who dresses the, yeah, exactly. Who knows what fork to eat with
There you
in
go.
brunch, right? And but that doesn't say anything about their character. That doesn't say anything about their potential, right? And I think as a society, my hopes are that we're confronting those barriers. But and I think we can celebrate that, especially since Masai actually did get the contract
Yeah,
extension. He
thank
did get the
goodness.
ownership stake. But we're also as a franchise reaping the rewards of a more holistic frame of analysis, right? So
Yeah.
rather than selecting the guy that we think we need to select,
Right.
or the NBA intelligentsia tells us to
Yeah.
select, like a Sharif Cooper from Auburn, great, really great collegiate point guard. We're saying no. Our num our scouting reports and our analysis are telling us that we should give a different take a different type of direction
Right.
in selecting someone like a Delano Benton,
Yeah.
because he's offering something that actually matches what we envision our team to be, rather than just the name that he's associated with and the hype that you know that
Right.
he can create in our selection of him. And we're reaping the rewards, and that's probably what I'm so excited. I'm
Yeah.
excited for his story to
Yeah.
get this type of spotlight. And obviously this falls in within our organization doing that. So
Yeah.
I went a little bit long,
No,
but
that's good. I wanted to add just that, you know, when I read the comments, when I read Morgan Campbell's article, obviously when I read the headlines as well about this, the thing that really caught my attention was the two phrases about Masai. You know, he's not worth it. You have no clue what this guy has done if you're going to say he's not worth it. I would have given him the seat of mayor. That's how much he's done for the city and for the franchise. But then to say, and this is the one that I think hits
I know
home
what you're, yeah, I know, I didn't know where you're
with
going with.
yourself,
Yeah.
and with many others. My wife faces the same thing at work. This guy, he was arrogant. That comment. And as I was thinking about this story, something percolated in my mind Something with there was a familiarity about all this. And I wanted to share something that I read this week that I think will kind of frame this, this story. It's because it's a common one. I just want to read this to you. Yo, I ain't seeing you in a minute, but I got something to tell you. Listen. See, the thing about you that caught my eye is the same thing that makes me change my mind. Kind of hard to explain, but dude, I'll try. You need to sit down. This may take a while. See, this dude, he sort of looks just like you. He even smiles just the way you do. So innocent he seemed, but I was fooled. I'm reminded when I look at you. You remind me of a dude that I once knew. See his face whenever I look at you. You won't believe all the things that he put me through. This is why I just can't get with you. Edward Rogers, we've seen you before, man. We've seen your joke type phrases. We've seen your racist slurs. You remind me of a dude that we all knew, that we all know. That's what came to mind. Usher's lyrics came to my mind when I heard this story, my friend. And I had to share that.
I mean, he's someone, you know, who has no problem rubbing shoulders in Mar-a-Lago with the Donald Trumps of the world. And so we know his cards, and so we shouldn't be shocked by this.
Yeah, definitely.
And yet we should be grateful that it didn't, it didn't disrupt the negotiation process so much as to have Masai leave.
Right? The city would be in ashes, my friend. The city would be in ashes.
Gracious.
All right, man. Well, before we close this off and maybe get to a lighter note, besides talking about the potential of the city of Toronto being in ashes, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
In my opening, I mentioned how I code switch, and I would make reference to it in later in the pod, and it was in reference to the Masai versus Edward Rogers Jr. saga. Many people who are underrepresented in society self-modulate. They code switch. They try to fit into certain boxes. On a spectrum, they either assimilate or they integrate and trying to maintain a level of integrity. Even people I think who assimilate, there's still a level of integrity that they've maintained, but they're making sacrifices in order for them to kind of fit in. And I realized, even after a year doing this pod, doing this, I do self-modulate. I code switch on the pod often. Make sure that I articulate English in a way that ensures I don't give any sense of an accent. Bryce, I didn't mention this, but I think I did. When I was in Vegas, I was hanging out with a couple of guys, a couple of brothers from California, Latino brothers from LA. And they were like, "You don't talk like guys from Toronto." I was like, "What do you mean?" Like Drake and those guys, I'm like, "Oh, okay." And there were, younger guys. So I was like, "Okay, so you're telling me in this conference where we're a bunch of minorities, right? Yeah. There's three black people. There's three Latinos. You're going to tell me I'm going to talk like Drake? You want me, that's how I want, you want me to talk in this professional setting?"
Right. And then it's not like those guys who were white, who were other conference people. It's not like they were Tyler Hero or Rex Chapman.
No. They weren't. And so I told them, "You guys don't talk like you're in LA amongst yourself. You don't talk that way here.
Yeah.
That's why I don't talk that way here either. Right. We're trying to fit in. Right. Yeah. We're trying to make sure that we're professional at a level in which we can be, we can navigate this scene."
Yeah.
And trust me, there's sacrifices there. Right?
Yeah.
It was a moment. And so I realized I do that here at the pod. Now that doesn't mean I don't, I'm faking it, or there's a different version of Zaya But I'm wondering, you know, my Messiah, how, what did he have to sacrifice, right? And to fit in to corporate, the corporate culture, not just in the NBA, but also in Toronto, right? Now, I'm not saying he's not bright or he's self-modulating in any way. I don't want to assume that's the case for him. Because I share this, you know, a tiny similar story as Delano, coming from the same neighborhood, knowing the same slang, the same expressions, and what you need to do to fit in, because, you know, telling our, you know, listeners, hey, please don't dismiss someone who speaks a particular way or uses certain expressions. It doesn't dilute the fact that they're still intelligent, the fact that they're intelligent and whatnot. But I think I need to keep myself accountable moving forward to ensure that I present a more wholesome, enthusiastic version of myself without thinking I will need to self-modulate for the purposes of my audience. So I'll do that for myself moving forward. And I think in the spirit of what examples Masai Ujiri and Delano Banton is, take it or leave it, man.
Yeah.
This is me.
Yeah. So. Definitely. I appreciate that, man. That's a personal ad to the pod that oftentimes you don't necessarily give. Not that we're entitled to it in any way, even as your friend of over 15 years on the pod, not entitled to it, but I appreciate what you've said, and obviously your perspective, both in the Edward Rogers saga. I hope he gets fired from his job, gets booted from the family before there's reconciliation. And obviously with Masai, I think Masai and Delano, you have a lot more in common with than I do, and can shed light to a lot of those who listen. We talked about finishing on a bit of a lighter note.
Yeah.
If that's okay with you.
Of course.
I've got a little game that I want to play with you.
All right, let's go.
We've done something like this before when we were saying who should make the team and who shouldn't earlier in the season. And this game is called Approve It or Keep Working On It. And it's the nicknames that I've begun to brainstorm for guys on our team, because apparently at halftime, I don't have anything better to do. As my wife puts my daughter to bed, and as the dishes are already washed at 9 o'clock, this is what I do. So I have four nicknames here that I want to give. The first one is with Svi, who I really like and is probably the 10th guy on this roster, especially when Pascal returns.
Yeah.
Svi's nickname, I've been thinking about one, a 007, but I'm distancing myself from that one. And the one that I think I've landed on that I want your approval or tell me to keep working on is GoldenEye, another James Bond reference.
Okay. He's shooting 40% from three, 50% from the field.
Okay.
From the field. He needs more minutes for him to get that GoldenEye sharpshooter tag.
Yeah.
I like it, but
he's got work to do. It's not me. Yeah. It's him that has
exactly.
Okay. Good stuff. This one I'm not as confident on. This is with Scotty Barnes. I think there's going to be lots of things. I like that Fast and the Furious for Scotty and for Delano, but that's more to talk to. And Yuta, I think, in the mix with my Tokyo Drift nickname. But Scotty Too Hottie is right now that I'm working on.
Yeah, that sounds like a wrestler's name, man.
It was. So I got work to do is what you're saying.
Yeah, that exactly. Yeah. You have work to do. Go back to the lab.
The third guy is Chris Boucher. Now, he has his own nickname from his Oregon days, Slim Duck. But here's one that I just thought of within the last 2 days. Elastique. He stretches the floor. He's a lengthy guy. Instead of saying elastic man, I use a little French pronunciation, elastique. What do you think of that one?
I have to hear someone like Jack Armstrong say it.
Right. That's the tough thing.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. I mean, can you reach out to his peoples?
Send him a free bottle of bourbon, maybe.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that guy would take us out for dinner if we do that.
Okay, so I got maybe got to keep working on it or
Keep working on
find
that. Keep working.
someone
Yeah, keep
some
working on
something.
it. Keep working on it. But he
Okay.
does have to graduate from that slim dunk tag.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
I think it's it. The last one, and we've been talking a lot about Delano Banton. I saved the best for last. The last one is Delano Banton's that I've been pushing a little bit on Twitter and now on the pod, T-Rex.
Done. I love it. I know. I read it. I read it on the TL. And you told me obviously earlier in the week. No, I'm done. I don't know if it's going to stick, but I like it. It's a reference to his home, home neighborhood.
Obviously, Toronto
Toronto
Raptors,
Raptors. The
Jurassic
T
kind
can represent Toronto for all
of.
I care. I mean, it T Rex is menacing, and I think yeah, he has a he has that good look in here and that cute smile, but no, that guy's coming out to eat you, man. He,
Definitely.
he's a menace on the court, and I think that T-Rex encapsulates that.
Brilliant. Brilliant. All right. Well, I'll keep working on Scotty Too Hotty. I'll put out feelers for LSD
Have you
and hope.
given up on the butcher for Fred? Because I
No,
think
I
that's
will not
gone
give
off.
up on the butcher. I will not give up on the
Okay,
butcher.
anyway.
I mean, he carved up Orlando last night in the fourth, man.
Yo, my man carved up Orlando like he's a butcher at a Polish meat shop in Toronto, man. Like my man, shout out to my Polish peoples. Peter, I see you. I liked it. I mean, but it's situational, right? It's not, well, he also is a butcher on the defensive end, man, because his hands, like he gets in there. Right, he gets his hands dirty and
When you're
butchers.
lifting, the big slabs of beef or big cuts
Yeah,
of swine, you got to be able to have strong hands.
swine. Goodness gracious.
All right, man. Well,
Don't tell
that's
me.
all I got in the nickname
Okay,
department
okay,
for
okay. All
now.
right, keep it coming. Keep it coming.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well,
Keep it coming. We have Pacers tonight, right? We're in Indiana.
In Indiana, against the
Hoosier
Pacers.
State.
Hopefully, we can Yuta Watanabe come back, and we can see Fast and the Furious, the full lineup, Yuta,
Wow.
Barnes and Banton. That would be exciting if we got that tonight. Lots of good things, man. Who knows? Their seeds are growing, and underneath the ground, we don't know what's necessarily going to spread up. But from what we've got, from the fruit that we've picked from the tree, I think we're pretty excited with what we've got. More to come on the Indiana game. I look forward again giving you this week to think about all the aspects of the Raptors as a franchise and as a team. I look forward to next week's confessions, my friend.
Hey, looking forward to it, man. Let's go get it.
All right. Well, to our listeners, to you, my friend, have a great weekend. Peace.
Holla at your boy. Peace.